This is Hacker Public Radio, episode 3865, for Friday, the 26th of May, 2023. Today's show is entitled, When Did the Internet Get So Boring? It is part of the series Information Underground. It is the 280th show of Klaatu, and is about 32 minutes long. It carries a clean flag. The summary is, thoughts about the modern World Wide Web.
Hey everybody, this is Klaatu. As many of you have probably noticed, the internet is kind of boring now. You go to a search engine, you type in a thing, and if there's nothing on that thing, then the search engine gives you a bunch of irrelevant responses anyway. You go to a search engine, you type in a thing, and there's a bunch of stuff on that thing, so your search engine gives you all of the things that have been paid for by some big company to put information about that thing in your head. Now, that is possibly what you want, right? I mean, sometimes you just want to go to a web page for a thing that you want information on, and if someone's paid for it to be there, then that's fine. But other times you actually just kind of want other people's views on a thing. You want a person to tell you their thoughts about something. And while you can buy that sort of thing, if you're a big company, you can sponsor that, you can give a home for that kind of content. You can do that. You can try to get people to contribute to that entity. I'm thinking in terms of, like, for instance, Goodreads, right? Goodreads is a site. It's a website, and people contribute to Goodreads by writing reviews of books for Goodreads. And most reviews usually read like real people who have actually read a book. Not all the reviews, but some of the reviews kind of read like actual authentic thoughts about a thing. And that's kind of refreshing. And in a way, that's why I'm on the internet. I mean, that's a big part of why I'm attracted to the internet, because I can get people's thoughts about a thing. And ideally, they're informed thoughts that come from a place of actual, like, experience. Now, I was using Goodreads as an example, and I kind of left it as, it's a pretty good site. And I didn't mean to leave it there, actually, because Goodreads actually isn't a very good site. I used to be on it. I'm not on it anymore, or maybe I am on it, but I'm not active on it. I don't remember if I was able to close my account or whatever. But I think I read somewhere, and this is spurious, this could be, who knows, I think I kind of read somewhere that, speaking of coming from a place of experience and information, but I think I read somewhere that Goodreads had been bought by Amazon, which is probably true because everything's been bought by Amazon or Disney. So whatever, let's say it's not true. Either way, Amazon is probably scraping Goodreads for reviews to put onto Amazon.com for books, because at one point in time, Amazon primarily was a bookseller, I think. So the point is that even something like Goodreads, and again, I'm using it as this weird example, as if though it's like this thing of purity that has been corrupted. I don't know anything about Goodreads. It's something that came to my mind. Goodreads existed, and you kind of realize at some point while you're putting in your reviews for books and keeping track of the books that you've read and the ones that you want to read, you realize at some point that, oh my gosh, I'm feeding into a machine that I don't even own. Like, why am I doing this? Like, I'm essentially working for this company for free. And then, you know, the counterpoint to that, valid counterpoint, is, well, that company is providing a service to you. It's got a server, it's got a platform, it's got a little CMS, it's got a thing that you can put data into, and you can keep track of the books that you've read or the books that you want to read and the editions that you've read and your thoughts on those books. And that is legitimately a useful service. Like, that's why I had originally signed up to Goodreads, because I thought, you know what? I can't remember what I've read from week to week, much less from year to year, so I need a place to keep track of that. Oh, here's a website here. I'll just sign up for it and use that. And for a long time, for a couple of years, like, that was that worked for me. That was great. That was useful for me. But again, at some point, at some time during my usage of that, I realized I was actually populating someone else's database, and I didn't know who that someone else was. I didn't know what they were going to do with the information that I was putting in, as frivolous as it may be. You just don't know. And it's not that I think that they have anything nefarious in mind. I just happen to think that I don't know who it is. I don't know these people. I don't know why I would be using their service when I could instead just, I don't know, enter my thoughts into a text file. But you know what? The problem with a text file is that it lives on your computer, and that's as far as it goes. Not that it needs to go any farther necessarily, but then again, when it comes to book reviews, I mean, it's kind of fun to tell people what you thought of a book. That's kind of the idea of like a book club or just pop culture commentary, really. And so then I thought, well, okay, maybe I should put that text file onto a server. Well, I ended up doing that, long story short, and I just have a bunch of text files that I review random stuff, and I put it on a server, and I slapped a static site generator in front of it, and I commit my thoughts via Git, and it triggers the static site generator to turn those text files into a web page, and bang, it's on a server. I don't know if anyone can ever find that server. It's not very well indexed. It's probably not even very well taxonomied, to be frank. But it's there. It's online. I feel like, hey, I'm sharing my thoughts with the world. Great. Pat on the back. Feeling connected. That's the thing about a network, right? A network. In computer sense, we probably, possibly all know what that means. And if we don't, we could go back, we could watch, we could listen to Hacker Public Radio episodes about networking and things like that and figure it out. But let's assume for the moment that we understand what a computer network is. One computer's here, one computer's there, they're able to talk to each other, able to listen to each other. That's actually what a people network is too, as it turns out. And I don't know which term came first. I don't know if network is a computing term that got adopted for people, or if it's a people term that got adopted for computers. I don't know the etymology of, is that the study of insects or words? I forget. But anyway, I don't know what network means or where it came from, but let's just say that the network, you need two things. You need to be able to speak, and you need to be able to listen. Those are the two things about networking that matter. In modern sort of internet speak, I think we call that engagement. So a network, a network of people, it kind of, in order to be satisfying, I think it needs engagement. You need to be able to speak and feel like you are being heard. And then also, I think most people in a network also want to hear other people's thoughts. And I'm not saying like everyone, I'm not saying statistically everyone, I'm saying everyone I want to interact with are those kinds of people who want to both speak and listen. It's a thing about conversations. It's just, that's a good conversationalist, right? You can speak a little, you can listen a little, do a little bit of both. In more or less equal amounts, or maybe you could listen a little bit more than you speak, and people love you. That's how conversations tend to work. It's pretty good. So that's what a network is. And I feel like the modern internet, and I think a lot of people in certain circles agree with this feeling, I think the modern internet is starting to lean towards that space of talking a lot and not listening a whole lot. Now, I'm not saying like, oh, not enough internet websites have comment boxes. Comments aren't what I'm talking about. I think that was a corporate sort of understanding of, oh, a conversation needs to happen quick. Let's populate everything with comment boxes so that people can give their thoughts right now, instantly online. And that'll be a conversation, right? Well, not necessarily. I mean, you can have a conversation with someone through a glass pane where you can't actually hear each other, or they can hear you, but you can't hear them. You could say, I'd love to know your thoughts. And then you could just let people shout without sound at you. And you could claim that that was a conversation. Hey, they could hear me and I asked for their feedback and they gave me my feedback. Never mind that I couldn't hear them. And that's, I think, essentially what a comment section on a website tends to be. I mean, at a certain point, you get that sort of mass capacity of comments where it just starts to be a noise generator. You can't possibly process all of that feedback. And so it becomes functionally meaningless. It's people talking back at you, but you're not hearing it because there's just too much of it. And that's what the internet tends to, in the comment fields at least, that's kind of what it encourages. It's just like, quick, spit out some words and never come back to follow up on that. Just dump your thoughts here and then go away. And that's not a meaningful conversation. So the internet, I think, leans towards being able to speak a lot. The companies that own websites are speaking at you because, I mean, they want to sell stuff to you, so they're going to speak at you. They might pay people to write articles for them or to post content for them, to create content for them. And that works okay, and I guess eventually they might use AI to generate that content. So you really, really feel like you're being spoken to. And then you're told, hey, you can speak too, because here's a comment field. Please comment. Share your thoughts. Smash the like button. Share your thoughts. And so you do that. You type in a bunch of thoughts. And so now you've spoken. So two people have spoken. Has a conversation happened? No, because there was never any act of listening. And you could even take the same analogy or the same process to like those chat bots on a lot of websites now. Look, you can even speak like to a real chat field and it will talk back to you. And sometimes it's, you know, it's obviously an automated thing and it kind of self-identifies as that. Other times it's this sort of entity that you're not really sure. Like, is it just a really well-performing chatbot that continually thanks you for your patience and assures you that it is eager to help you? Or is it a person reading a script that tells you, that tells the person to type in this phrase and then that phrase? You can't really tell, and functionally there's no difference. The point is, there's no conversation happening there. A little while ago, people used to say things like, oh, the internet is being destroyed, the great places like GeoCities are being taken offline, and what a travesty. And I always got confused by that, because I was never really a GeoCities fan. I thought, yeah, okay, so a bunch of sites that are coded really poorly and that are probably abandoned after, like, the first five posts is going away. Like, big deal. Why does that matter? And there are other places too that people kind of pine over longingly and wistfully, thinking, oh, I can't believe that's going away. And in retrospect now, and I'm talking about retrospect like a year ago, because that's when people were complaining about it, or maybe 2 years ago, I realized that what they were actually saying, what they were actually lamenting, wasn't the website itself. It's not GeoCities dot whatever it was that they are lamenting going away. They were lamenting, I mean, whether they knew it or not, I think they were lamenting the loss of that true interactivity, that true sense of conversation, where you could go to someone's little fan site on some random thing that you thought you were the only person in the universe who knew about, and there's this fan site with like all these screenshots from that thing and a episode listing of all the different episodes. Sorry, now I'm starting to go down my own little imaginary site that on Lex, for the record. But anyway, you know, there were these places on the internet, and you just thought, this is crazy. Like, who is this person? And maybe you couldn't respond directly to them. Maybe you could. Maybe they had an email address or something. But maybe you couldn't. And so your method of conversation was to spin up your own website about a similar subject, or that encompasses that subject. And so now you're partaking in a conversation in this kind of roundabout way, but you're also forming these like little clusters. And of course, I mean, the more that happened, the more things like web rings happened, where people with similar interests would just link to each other's websites. Just, here you go. Here's a link. If you liked my site on this subject, click the web ring. You'll go to another site on the same subject, that sort of thing. So in a weird way, it was less of a conversation than what we have now, I guess, by letter of the law. And yet in spirit, it is so much more of a conversation. And it's also a lot more participatory and interactive. So I've been thinking about this a lot lately, because the modern internet doesn't seem to understand that real conversations don't consist of just shouting at a wall. So what's left? What's online right now where there are conversations happening, like meaningful conversations? I really badly want to say like Mastodon. I kind of want to say, oh, there's Mastodon. It's federated. It's so cool. Look, Mastodon is federated. It is really cool. It's a great piece of technology, and the community is a community of people. So there's a lot of different kinds of people there. And you can go onto Mastodon and you can talk. You can talk to people directly. You can have real conversations about real topics. I just got a bunch of help about little plastic miniatures, how to glue them together properly, because I've bought four different kinds of glues, and I'm just not sure which one is the right one. So I just asked Mastodon, and I got a bunch of responses back, and they were really, really useful. And I still can't glue things together, but I mean, it was really useful. I made contacts. My paths crossed with people I would not have otherwise encountered. So that was a very cool experience. But it does have a sense of kind of being very ephemeral. So I don't know how unique that is on the internet. I mean, it is unique and it's important and it's significant. And I don't want to undersell the power of sort of communal chat. And I think that can be what Mastodon is. Mastodon and Matrix, these, in a way, in a sense, for me, they're the new IRC. They're that kind of place where you'll have some really good interactions, but it might be ships passing in the night, to borrow a phrase about IRC. It might be something that happens and then you move on. And that's fine. I mean, that's a legitimate form of connection, right? I mean, we many of us experience that kind of thing at technical conferences or game conferences or whatever group activity you go to. You might meet someone, you might interact, and then you part ways and you never think about each other again, much less talk to each other again, and that's okay. Or maybe you do think of that person, but you don't know how to contact them. All of that stuff, that's fine, that's okay, that's totally legitimate. But I'm thinking more about community, I guess, like permanent, you know, semi-permanent like communities that are building on top of each other and sort of expanding with one another. So, I mean, Hacker Public Radio is a really great example of a thriving conversational community. Not all the conversations are great, not all of them are easy, but they're being had, and people are making connections, and people have made friends. I mean, I know a lot of hosts by name, only by name, but I feel super close to them because I listen to their content and I hear the weird things that they do in their shows or the cool things that they do in their shows, and that's cool. And I can respond to them in a roundabout way. Again, well, actually, I can respond to them directly through comments, but I feel like the more valuable way to respond to people for my money is to just record a show that sort of iterates on an idea heard in another show, or that maybe it doesn't even iterate. Maybe it's just for no good reason, your show about bass fishing made me think about the time that I built a bookshelf for myself. Let's record a show about that. So there's lots of opportunity, I think, in Hacker Public Radio to not capture but preserve the original, or I don't know if it's the original intent of the internet, but the internet that I know and love. The weird thing about it, I guess, if there's not enough weirdness on HBR, is that it's audio based, and that I don't really associate all that much with the internet. I mean, I do because podcasting is a thing. I quite like podcasting, but in terms of like the internet, you think of it as, at least I think of it as, a website. Your website that you go to, you visit, you experience that website, and then, like I say, maybe you go off and write a blog post or something of your own. But I mean, I think that is kind of just my filter, right? Because I very much tend to think in terms of long form, quote unquote, articles or blog posts. I mean, that's just kind of like the way that that's what I find value in, because I like, you know, opening a web browser and finding a cool article to read in an afternoon, or while waiting for my order at the cafe or whatever. So that's just maybe my filter. So anyway, Hacker Public Radio, really good. Mastodon, nice little IRC replacement. Matrix, nice little IRC replacement. And then there's two others that I've been using a lot more lately. And I say using by meaning I've been trying, and those are Gopher and Gemini. So if you don't know what Gopher is, it actually, whether or not you know what Gopher is, it is an early internet protocol, or I guess I should say an early protocol. I don't know if it technically like predates what we know as the internet. I don't know. I was never really into Gopher, you know, back when Gopher was actually like the thing. But apparently Gopher, you know, for people who were much more technical at that point than I was, Gopher was kind of a competitor to HTML, or it was trying to solve the same, I guess, problem, or fill the same need as HTML was, or should I say HTTP. And that would be that someone has a server and wants to share content in a read-only way to a bunch of people. Gopher was one way you could do that. HTTP is also a way you could do that. And those are basically answering the exact same equations. Now, obviously, HTML has gone off in a direction very much all its own, and Gopher has very much stayed, as far as I can tell, exactly the same. Like, again, I don't know because I wasn't there, but Gopher doesn't seem to have progressed a whole lot. Gopher, I have found to be really clunky and really, really frustrating, frankly. I think a lot of people enjoy Gopher partly for the nostalgia, and I don't know if everyone enjoys it for the nostalgia of, oh, I remember when Gopher was the protocol that I used. But I do think some people see Gopher and think, now that is beautiful because it's really simple and clunky, and computing is supposed to be beautiful and clunky, and so let's go experience that again. Now, I don't really love clunky and beautiful computing. I like easy and beautiful computing. So Gopher to me is, I'm not in love with Gopher, but I do appreciate what it delivers, which is an experience that you can share stuff that you have on a server in a read-only way to people relatively simply. And I say relatively because, I mean, it's got, Gopher uses a Gopher map. That is what it uses. Well, that's what it can use by default to describe the files on a computer. Now, you can also just point it at a directory and say, look, there's a bunch of files in this directory. Go read all of them. You can do that. But if you don't want to do that, then you can use a Gopher map file. And the Gopher map file has a really, really particular syntax. It uses tabs as delimiters, and it has to be a tab character. If it's not a tab character, it will break. And so it's super frustrating. It really is. It is one of the most frustrating syntaxes that I can imagine. It's the worst. It is the absolute worst. And I hate the Gopher map file. The sooner I can get out of the Gopher map file, the better. To make it even worse, like, not only do you have tab-only delimiting, but you've got these stupid prefixes that you have to put in front of the file types. So if you're pointing to a file, you have to put like a 1, but if you're pointing to a directory, then it's a 0. But if it's an HTML file, then it's like, I don't know, a 7 or something. It's the stupidest, the worst, just the absolute worst syntax. I can't imagine a worst way to construct a map to a bunch of files on a server. I don't know historically why you needed all that information. I don't know historically why they chose only a tab and not just a white space or some other character, but that's what we have with Gopher. And Gopher is kind of cool. I mean, despite my problems that I have with the Gopher map file, it really, there's a lot of nice stuff there. You can put a bunch of text files, or a bunch of files for that matter, PDFs, whatever other kinds of files there are in the world, probably, what, images, I guess there are images, probably audio files, all of those things you can put onto a server. You can then grant access to the world to that directory through Gopher, and they can, a user could open up a terminal, launch a Gopher browser, and go to your server, and they'll see all of your files, and they'll be able to download them or read them in the terminal if they're just text files, and so on. So it is really, really nice. It's a a relatively quick and easy way to kind of get that middle ground between, like, I don't know, like an FTP read-only account and a full-blown HTTP, let's do a whole internet browser session, that kind of thing. So Gopher is a really nice way to share a bunch of stuff on a server without all the bloat, I guess, of HTTP or the administration nightmares of FTP, for instance. It's on port 70. There are different browsers that can look at Gopher, and it's not really easy to look at Gopher through a web browser. I mean, it's possible. You can go to proxies. You can install, I think, some plugins I haven't really tried lately. I just use Lynx, L-Y-N-X. It works great. But, I mean, and that's in a terminal. But I think that's kind of a weird benefit to Gopher, because I'm not sure how much I want my content to contribute to the internet these days. I mean, I'm not, like, philosophically opposed to it. I'm just saying I'm not sure that I have that need all that much. I mean, I obviously do, because I have websites on HTTP. But in terms of also posting to Gopher, I don't know that that's the kind of... I don't know that I care about the intersection of Gopher and HTTP. I might at some point, and you might, because you might want to have one source of truth, as it were, and then have different avenues to look at it. And that is possible. Like I say, there are sites that translate from Gopher to HTTP. There are ways that you could dynamically translate files from one to the other, you know, on your server, like when you're posting, and so on. So, I mean, it's an avenue that you could take. The modern take, I guess, on Gopher is Gemini, and Gemini is also fairly annoying, honestly. Gemini has an index.gmi file, and it has its own special markup, because of course it does. Why would it do something like just reuse Markdown? No, it takes Markdown and then insists on certain conventions, and it will refuse to display text files that are not in gem markup or gem markdown or whatever. That can be a little bit difficult sometimes. That can cause you a little bit of trouble, because you'll have a bunch of files and they're in Markdown or they're in ASCII doc, and you just want to put them on your server and walk away. Nope, you can't do that. You have to convert them to Gemini text, or Gemini Markdown, rather. And I have tried, and I mean, it could be the server that I'm using, it would have to be the server, right, that I was using. But I just cannot get Gemini to display, like, plain text, for instance. It just doesn't seem to want to do that, at least on whatever I'm running, which I don't know what I'm running. I'm just using whatever sdf.org is using. I haven't looked into it that much. Probably not a great idea to go public with my critique of the thing, not knowing even what Gemini server I'm running. But there you go. Gemini has a syntax thing that admittedly is a little bit awkward sometimes. However, of course, there's open source solutions to everything. Gemini is open source. You can get a Markdown to Gemini converter on, there's a project on GitHub. You can get it from pip python 3-m pip install md2, the letter 2, md2 Gemini, and that'll convert your Markdown files to Gemini text. It is remarkably similar, and that's what's so annoying, is that the similarities are just so it's just so silly that one isn't the same as the other. So that's probably my actual complaint. Gemini, in every other way, is pretty darn cool. I mean, it's a little bit inconvenient, because I can't figure out yet how to do a directory listing in Gemini. It might not be possible. I don't know. So I'm having to add every file that I want to be visible to the viewer into a .gmi kind of index file. So, you know, it's like, I would rather just be able to point to directory and say, there's all my text files, go read them. But that's just not something that as far as I can tell, that's not something Gemini wants to do, at least yet. It's early days, to be fair. So, I don't know. I mean, Gemini, I think, is a little bit more slick than Gopher, but it does have its quirks, and it's got a certain amount of self-imposed limitations because it doesn't want to be or become like HTTP, which, I mean, I can respect that. So Gopher and Gemini are two solutions for sharing things on a big network that are not super likely to be taken over by sort of corporate interests anytime soon, or at least that's the hope. And it's a great way, I think, to motivate yourself to get off of HTTP onto some backwoods networking groups that maybe just don't really necessarily belong in the HTTP space or the WWW space anymore. And that's refreshing. I mean, it's just, I don't want to reiterate the first 30 minutes of this show, but I just have to point out that the internet is really boring now. It's just it's a frightfully sort of dull place. Whereas Gopher and Gemini and Hacker Public Radio and some other places are really doing a lot of heavy lifting to keep content sort of unique and not perfectly manicured. I want to say independent, but I don't know what that really means. So just it's something that's, I don't know, made of people. And that's refreshing. I'm tired of reading the AI blog posts or the blog posts that may as well have been written by an AI. That's depressing to me. I want real thoughts. I want people talking about what they think. That's what I find interesting. And I think that the World Wide Web doesn't necessarily provide that as much as it used to. I'm not saying it's not on the WWW at all. I'm just saying it's not quite there in the amount that it used to be. I'm not saying that Gemini and Gopher Spaces are a wealth of insightful and exciting information. I'm just saying that they exist and that they're being generated by weird people who have time to explore alternate protocols. That doesn't make any of us saints, or it doesn't mean that we're suddenly interesting, or that we're putting out quality content. It just means that there are alternate protocols out there that some people are using, and it's fun. You should check it out if you haven't already. And if you want to get involved in some other way, you could always record a show on Hacker Public Radio and continue the conversation. Remember what I said about conversations earlier. It's a callback. Thanks for listening. Talk to you next time.
You have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. Today's show was contributed by a HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, you can click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hosting for HPR has been kindly provided by anhonesthost.com, the Internet Archive, and rsync.net. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 International License.